Hello everyone, and welcome to Afronomics, a podcast series produced by the World Bank Office of the Chief Economist for the Africa region. I'm Albert Zufak, I'm the Chief Economist for Africa. I'm here this morning with my power team of lead economists, Poonam Shuhan-Hall, Cesar Calderon, and David Evans. Welcome, Poonam.
Thank you, Albert. It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome, Cesar.
Thanks, Albert. It's a pleasure to be here too.
David.
Thank you very much for having me on Afronomics.
Excellent, excellent. We're glad to have you on Afronomics. And we're here to chat a bit about the findings of our fall edition of the Africa Pulse. The Pulse is our bi-yearly publication that we issue in April and October leading up to our annual and spring meetings. It's a collaborative undertaking that incorporates the latest research across the bank and is meant to be our stocktaking of the economic health of the continent. Yes, the pulse of the continent. In this latest issue, we analyze the macroeconomic trends and focus on a special topic, skills for success in a transforming Africa. Poonam, as the lead author of the Pulse, tell us a little bit more about what are the trends, what is coming out of this new edition of the Pulse.
After 2 years of a slowdown in growth, Africa is continuing to recover. Amid favorable global economic conditions, global activity is increasing, trade is growing at a robust pace, global financial conditions are supportive, and commodity prices have been higher this year. So we are seeing that Africa is continuing to recover. However, the recovery is a little slower than what we had projected in our April issue of The Pulse. And I'll go into some of the reasons for that. But basically, the recovery in sub-Saharan Africa is being led by the largest economies in the region. Nigeria exited 15 months of negative growth in the second quarter of this year. And South Africa had two quarters of negative growth, which they were able to exit in Q2. So on the one hand, we are seeing that these economies are seeing somewhat faster growth. On the other hand, the growth that these economies are seeing is really quite weak and below the levels that these economies were enjoying in the period between 2010 and 2014. Of course, there's a lot of heterogeneity across the region. So we are also seeing that Angola is seeing a return to growth. Metal exporters are doing better because commodity prices are higher of extractives. And we are also seeing that our non-resource-rich countries, which are fairly diversified, such as Senegal and Tanzania, are growing, are continuing to grow at a fairly robust pace. So we have a range of economic performance in the countries in our region. But we do find that the CEMAC countries, which include many of our oil exporters, such as Chad and Congo Republic and Gabon, are struggling and are still impacted by the sharp collapse in commodity prices, in this case oil, that they have experienced since 2014. So going beyond the growth experience of these countries, we're finding that there are some favorable developments. In terms of current accounts, countries are seeing some improvement. There's a narrowing of current account deficits, which is being boosted by better commodity prices of oil and metals and minerals. However, agricultural commodities are struggling and have not been doing so well. So that is reflected in the current account of countries. But by and large, the current account deficits across the region are narrowing, with of course the largest improvement in oil exporters and exporters of metals and minerals.
So this is still a commodity story, Poonam.
I think you said that very well, Albert. It is definitely a commodity story. For the oil exporters and metal and minerals exporters, they are doing better. Production has increased in many of these countries, and investment is returning to some of these countries. But for countries that are dependent on agricultural exports, such as cocoa, and you know, I give an example of Cote d'Ivoire, they are being hurt a little bit by the weaker performance of commodity prices.
But we're also seeing a new trend, which is a sharp increase in debt in some countries.
Yes, after several years of elevated and rising fiscal deficits, countries across the region have seen an increase in debt burdens, and this is especially the case for our commodity exporters. Across the region, we have the median of government debt to GDP having gone up by 20 percentage points. For the oil exporters, by 20 percentage points and more, but for the region as a whole, it's gone up by about 15 percentage points between 2013 and the most recent year. So yes, debt burdens are rising. In some countries, they are above 60%. For example, Angola, the Congo Republic has seen a large increase in debt, as well as countries like Mozambique,
yeah.
So there is an issue there with rising debt burdens across the region. And this calls for, I think, a greater focus on being able to rebuild fiscal space, mm-hmm. and to look into issues of sustainability, fiscal sustainability and debt sustainability.
Right. Yeah, that's extremely interesting because, if anything, what we are also seeing in the polls is a tightening of fiscal space, isn't it? Cesar, you want to say so? You want to chip in here?
Yes. That's what you're observing in the region. If we go back to the year of the crisis in 2009, countercyclical government spending was an important part of the policy strategy of the continent. Mm-hmm. But the situation back then was different to what the situation is now. Back then you had countries with lower debt burdens, countries with fiscal savings, mm-hmm. and also access to market. Now some countries continue doing countercyclical spending, but the only element that remains is still access to financing. And it's because there are still global investors in the world that are searching for yields. When we look at the performers in the country, in the region, we observe that the countries that are doing the worst in terms of economic growth are the ones that are spending more, mm. and that are incurring more debt.
That's interesting.
The fact that they continue having a poor performance in growth means that fiscal multiplier might be very small.
Very low.
Very low, exactly. On average, these dynamics that we're observing, both of rising deficits and rising debt, basically what has done is reduce the fiscal space of the continent. A broad measure of fiscal space is typically the ratio of the debt divided by your tax base. Mm-hmm. That basically tells you the number of tax years that will take you to fully repay your debt. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately for the average African country, that measure has increased in 1 year. By 1 year for your average African country. But there are countries in the continent, including Mozambique, for instance, where that ratio, that the number of years to repay the debt has increased by 2.5 or 3 years.
That's really serious, and that also tells quite an important story about efficiency of public spending in Africa, a topic we have discussed in previous editions of the Pulse.
Exactly.
So tightening fiscal space, but we are also seeing some return in equity investment and in FDI. So how do you square those, Poonam?
Well, the good news is that after a pullback in 2016, bond flows have increased and equity inflows have also increased, as well as an uptick in FDI. Mm-hmm. So it's good to see the return of capital to the region, and it also highlights, I think, investor sentiment being positive towards mm-hmm. A range of countries in mm-hmm. Africa. It's welcome to see that FDI is coming back. It'll be important for FDI to also come to the non-resource sector. You know, there the services sector, manufacturing, and other sectors as well.
So diversification is not happening still.
I think you have hit the nail on the head there, Albert. Most of our countries are not diversifying at the pace that we'd like them to. Mm-hmm. The resource-rich countries, especially the oil exporters, are still very dependent on the oil and energy sector. And in other countries, there has been some diversification, but it is slow. Mm-hmm. So I think with FDI coming in, this helps to diversify the economy, and especially with FDI, there's both a demand for skills, mm-hmm. so higher skilled, workers, and at the same time, it sort of helps to foster more skills in the economy.
Oh, you said the magic word, skills. And skills is actually the theme of our special topic for this Pulse. So, you know, in order to sustain these new investments, we need more skills, we need quality skills, and we need skills certainly for today, but also for the future. David, this is, a topic you have certainly investigated at length. Can you tell us what are the key messages of this special topic on skills?
Certainly. Thank you very much, Albert. So in this issue of The Pulse, we draw on a forthcoming study, the Skills Balancing Act in Sub-Saharan Africa, to look at where Africa is today on skills and where it is going and needs to go in the future. Right. It's an exciting time for skills in Africa. You have an unprecedented number of children with access to education, something we now have 2 in 3 children who are completing primary school, many who have the chance to go on to secondary school, and a rising number who are graduating from university. So it's exciting.
It is exciting news indeed.
But there's a caveat, right, which is that first, we haven't even finished that race yet. Yeah. And so you still have 1 in 3 kids who aren't finishing primary school. And the quality of skills provision often lags. And so, for example, in a recent evaluation in East Africa, 3/4 of children couldn't read and comprehend a very simple sentence by the 3rd grade. And that's a level that in high-income countries would be regarded as a big red flag.
That signals real issue in quality and learning outcomes.
Exactly. And you see that not only at the beginning of the education system, but later on, mm-hmm. with the technical and vocational education training systems, where in Sub-Saharan Africa, those systems have tended to rate lower than those of other systems in terms of relevance, in terms of accountability, in terms of being demand-driven. But the exciting thing is that there are solutions and there are countries that are making real progress in this regard, mm-hmm. both on the continent and beyond.
Right. So what should a typical African country do to improve skills for the future?
So countries across Sub-Saharan Africa can improve skills moving forward, but it takes investments throughout the skills building process. So that means reducing stunting. So children who are malnourished in early years, 20 years later, are significantly less likely to be able to contribute to the economy, be able to garner the kinds of wages that they would like to be able to have productive lives. So Senegal, for example, has dramatically reduced stunting in recent years with a high-level campaign with national leadership and a multifaceted investment. At the same time, foundational skills in the early years of primary are absolutely crucial.
Absolutely.
Now, a lot of countries are frustrated because they've put money into that, and Sub-Saharan African economies are investing a significant amount of their public resources in primary education. But the fact of the matter is, we can use evidence we have to improve the quality of that education. So one example is that in the training of teachers, much teacher training across the continent is deeply theoretical and not substantive enough. So what you end up with is teachers who often don't even know the content that they're supposed to be teaching, and certainly not how to impart it. But innovative programs in Liberia and Uganda, for example, have experimented with more practical Innovative programs in Liberia and Uganda have experimented with more practical, more continuous teacher education that have led to students learning at two or three times the speed. And Kenya, for example, is scaling up that kind of program nationwide.
David, that's actually very, very interesting. One of the messages that struck me in this pulse is that African countries are actually investing quite substantively in education, and probably investing more than other developing regions. The problem is, you know, outcomes do not follow those huge investments, which bring back again that notion of you know, efficiency of spending. Is there any way to actually improve those outcomes?
So in some cases, it's not so much a matter of spending more, because right. again, African countries have invested a lot, so much as it is a case of investing better.
That's right.
So in terms of teacher preparation, in terms of inputs, there are ways that African countries can actually shift spending that doesn't necessarily cost more, but in order to have teachers trained more effectively, taking advantage of the very latest evidence in what works to improve student learning. The same is true with technical and vocational education. So there are some countries who have invested in a public-private partnership to leverage the private sector, both in technical education and in more traditional higher education at university. The private sector has strong incentives for there to be skilled workers coming out of higher education. And so countries that are able to invest in those partnerships are both able to leverage some of the costs, but also deliver students into the workforce who have more of the skills that the private sector demands.
Right. And that is also, David, there is also the delicate balance between skills for productivity and growth and skills for inclusion. We do have a considerable stock of human capital in Africa that needs upgrading. You know, literacy, adult literacy programs, you know, what can we say about that balance, and how can countries actually strike that balance?
Thank you, Albert. Every country faces a balancing act between both investing in those workers who are already in the workforce and those who will be coming up in the next generation. Mm-hmm. The returns are highest for investing in those young people who will eventually be coming into the workforce. But at the same time, if we're talking about reducing stunting in the early years of primary school, those returns aren't realized for 10 or 20 years. At the same time, in countries where fewer than 50% of adults are literate, it's very difficult to imagine significant economic transformation that doesn't involve some upgrading of those skills. Right. So some countries outside the region, like Mexico and Brazil, have done a really nice job of bringing adult literacy and adult skills upgrading programs into their social safety net programs. And as more and more African countries expand cash transfer programs and other safety nets, there are opportunities to combine those with chances for adults to upgrade their skills. One thing that we've seen in India is that when you upgrade adult skills, children's skills also increase at higher rates. So it's an investment in the next generation as well.
Great. I will not end this discussion without bringing in the technology aspect. You know, I'm fond of leapfrogging, and I've been talking a lot about leapfrogging these days. How can technology help improving these learning outcomes, David?
So there are lots of different ways that technology can play a role. But the first thing to keep in mind is that technology is no silver bullet. Right. So by itself, technology doesn't solve fundamental problems of teacher motivation or teacher preparation. Right. That said, this is the 21st century, and African countries are increasingly involved in the digital world. And if we want a workforce that's going to be able to function well in that world, create new jobs, the only way to do that is to make sure that they have access to digital technology and the opportunity to use that technology and innovate.
Looking forward, Poonam, any final word?
When we look at the growth projections over the next two, three years, we see that growth is going to remain quite low compared to even recent historical standards. We expect growth in 2018 to come in at 3.2% and in 2019 at about 3.5%. This is really below nearly 5% growth rate that we have seen even after the financial crisis of 2008-09, when growth was about 5%, you know, in the period 2010 to 2014. So really, Africa needs to be able to ramp up growth. And to build that momentum for growth, along with investing in skills, they need to start diversifying their economies and maybe tackling the more difficult issues regarding structural reforms and regulatory reforms that improve the competitiveness of economies and that improve the, that will help to bring in investment as well as improve the productivity of Africa's workers.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Poonam. And this wraps up this edition of Afronomics. You can download a copy of the Africa Pulse and learn more about World Bank's work in Africa by visiting our website at www.worldbank.org/africapulse. Thank you and talk to you soon.